Audio going. To start it. Okay, there it goes. Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Charlie Robinson for the fourth time. You know his website, octopusatglobalcontrol.com. He's got books out there, Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. My buddy, Charlie Robinson, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm hated. I wish I was loved by YouTube as much as I am loved by you. Because I would have a much different relationship with YouTube. But those fuckers, they can't control themselves. I mean, I posted a video today of an interview with Matt Landman, who is the director of Frankenskies. To say that Matt and I were having a conversation about the weather would be completely accurate. And that interview was up for a grand total of 80 minutes before YouTube took it down and gave me a strike for dangerous content.
Oh. Hate speech, huh? For talking about the weather? I heard that macroaggressions episode audio. So audio is still working for people that pay for RSS feeds as hosts, as I do. Because that's the sure way when you pay something, it works. I just interviewed Ole Demigard on Thursday. We had a great interview, 2 hours, 15 minutes. It's on my RSS feed for audio. So if you go to erichollerbach.com, click Highway Diary, you can check that out. And then I have it there, when it uploads to BitChute, it'll go here. But if you click that link today, it'll go 404, message error, it's not, page doesn't exist. When I looked into it, it's like, maybe you disturbed one of our guidelines. We have new guidelines at BitChute starting June 1st, 2021, new guidelines of hate speech, all this stuff. So then there was another part where it was like on BitChute, like I read everything to do and they're like, well, if you also are having upload problems, maybe send a donation. So it's like, now I got to pay money to BitChute to put new videos on there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, Either hate speech or, bribes. Yeah.
I think what it really is it's not so much that we're engaging in hate speech, we're engaging in speech that they hate. And I think that's the main difference. So, you have Ole on, Ole is the best, you know, they know who he is, they don't care for him much. Shitting on their narratives and exposing this stuff. I wound up in Mexico at a bar at 2:45 in the morning with Ole talking about Operation Gladio, because when you get Ole in a bar and you're there late night, you ask him as many questions as you can, and when you get on Gladio, man, you just go as far as you can go. So I can appreciate you wanting to have him on the show. I've had him on my show as well, but the platforms just absolutely despise people like that because they are exposing these events and these narratives that these morons have taken. You know, at least they have a vested interest in trying to keep up the appearance that they're what they're saying is the truth, and you guys. We come along, and Ole comes along and starts poking holes in it. And they just can't have that. So I expect more censorship, not just on YouTube, but all some of the other ones. I'm a bit surprised to hear that from BitChute, but they should know about censorship. They get censored off of lots of platforms. Where if you pull up any sort of article and it links to BitChute, they give you like a warning. Like, are you sure you want to go interact with this dirty? Do you know where this dirty website has been? It's been, you know, doing all kinds of unspeakable things. Are you sure? Because if you're totally sure, you can click this little button down in the lower right corner. But otherwise, we're not going to send you there. So BitChute should know better.
And, I'm just mad at BitChute. It's like, at first I uploaded a 6 gigabyte version of the Ole podcast. So then I thought, then I waited 2 days. So then it said, okay, maybe that was too big of a file. So then I down-resed it to like 62 megabytes. And then I uploaded that. And same thing. Now I'm 4 days into that version of the interview. And that's still not posting. And then they're like, well, you know, if you're really having problems, donate. It's like, God damn. I got two strikes on my YouTube from Fulford episodes. So, you know, I have these comedy specials. And then, you know, I don't know if the numbers are getting pushed down, but I got like 1,000 views on each of my stand-up specials, conspiracies and dick jokes, fart porn and beer halls, and it's a medical device. So I got a great idea. I go, man, I watched for research purposes, I watched a 30-second handjob video on Pornhub. 3 million views. I go, I could use some of those views. I'll go where the people are. I'll put my stuff on Pornhub. Why not? So I put my stand-up specials on Pornhub, and then for, like, category, I was, like, solo male, solo female, because, like, you know, it's a solo performance stand-up.
Yeah.
And then my friend Geneva does stand, like, a little cameo spot, so I said female performance, too, you know what I mean? And then they go, oh, you violated our terms of service. For conspiracies and dick jokes, they said animal violation. And I was like, animal violation? I sent you these emails. And then I was like, what are they talking about? And I have one joke where I talk about my roommate's dogs eating my cum tissues, and they're like, animal strike. You know what I mean? Like, that's animal abuse, whatever. And this that is a true story. That was like 6 years ago. But anyway, then I put up another one. They're like, terms of service violation. So they go in their service, and it's like adult content. So on Pornhub, for me not taking my penis out, I got flags. On YouTube, you take your penis out, you get flags. In a shopping mall, you take your penis out, you get flags. But then on Pornhub, when you don't, then you get flags. So it's like, how do I operate? I'm trying to be a decent human being. It's hard to operate.
I think you should just have your dick out all the time.
Just Photoshop, like, or just put a JPEG of my dick over my pants, so it's not actually exposed. This is a photograph.
No, it's like a vending machine in Tokyo where they have like a picture of what you might be getting, maybe you get it, maybe you don't.
You got to insert a dollar here, and then maybe I take it out. Who knows? I don't know. It's hard, you know. I'm trying to figure out how to make money as a, you know, I got 4 skills in life, and 2 of them are telling dick jokes. One of them is I make a great meatball.
Only fans, you know, you're gonna have to earn it there.
But you know, I'm wondering, maybe I should be a small business. Maybe I should get some PPP loans. And then I realized the only PPP loans are going to Krispy Kreme to keep that conveyor belt of donuts on for the vaccinated.
That's true. If you could find a way to somehow incorporate free vaccinations into your stand-up routine, you might be in a position where you can shake the government down for some free money.
Yeah, you get a joke a day if you've been vaccinated. Retarded. Look, I think we're on the same boat here. I don't know if you ever saw a therapist, Charlie Robinson. Have you ever gone to see a therapist?
Yes, I have.
What did they say? Because I've got codependent personality disorder. What did they say for you?
You know what? I went to one. I remember years ago when I was living in Hermosa Beach, and I went to it there. I was with a girlfriend, and she accused me of having anger issues. And I've never been, like, physically violent with a girlfriend or wife or anything like that. I've never done anything like that. But I couldn't 100% disavow her possibility that I had anger issues, right? So I went to the therapist, and I laid out my reasoning behind this, and then when I got done, when the session was over, she said, you don't have real anger issues, you just have a low tolerance for stupidity. And I said, that is correct. So I think we got to the root of my problem. It's not so much that I'm angry, it's that I'm just frustrated that everybody else can't see the stupidity that I feel like I am, like, in the middle of. Mm. And when other people can't see that, then I think that makes me insane.
Mm. Yeah, you don't suffer fools. And that's, so you're intelligent. And you don't have a, like, you know, that doesn't sound so bad. I want to ask you this, because you said before you woke up to the dark agenda of the evil cabal, it's not like you were dumb, but you were, like, asleep, or you just took every the narrative for granted. Can you describe taking your personality with the girlfriend of, I can't believe people wear sandals and then go on, and then, you know, walk out and then, like, you know, they don't wash their sandals before they go out. They're disgusting people everywhere in Hermosa Beach. And that frustration built into, like, an awakeness of the agenda. What was that process?
Yeah, it was, so it wasn't that, like, you're right. It's not that I wasn't dumb. I just wasn't interested. I wasn't interested in a lot of the things that I'm interested in now. I was interested in, I knew about politics, and I'm going to take this from, like, when I graduated from college all the way through. So I graduated from college in 95, technically 94, but 95 I walked. And then 9/11 kind of woke me up a little bit, and then, like, 2 years after 9/11, then I really kind of woke up to 9/11. So it wasn't that on the morning of September 11th I had it all figured out. Far from it. But it took me a couple years, but it was the event of 9/11. But from that time when I was in college all the way up to 9/11, so we're talking like a good decade-long period, I wasn't interested in this stuff. So I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention to it. So we're talking about the second half of H.W. Bush's term and all two terms of Clinton. I was basically asleep at the wheel. Had no idea that the FBI was, you know, involved in Oklahoma City and things like that. I just didn't know. But it took... So my awakening happened, like a lot of people, in parts. You know, I didn't wake up all at once, but I knew that 9/11 wasn't what it was supposed to be. I didn't know why yet, but it just didn't feel right. So that was just more like on a gut level. Then what really did it for me, I think, was when they tried talking about Iraq and tying it to 9/11. And saying, well, we need to go invade them. And I was like, this line of reasoning is ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense here. You just spent the last 2 years telling us that Osama bin Laden's group did this, and now you're trying to tell us, oh yeah, but Saddam Hussein was involved in it too. I get the feeling that you're making this up about Saddam Hussein. I don't think he was really involved. I think you're just trying to create a reason for it. And then that leads you back to, well, maybe they're using Osama bin Laden to create a reason for that, too. Maybe that's not real. And then you backtrack and start to wake up. So my awakening, the process had to do with 9/11, but it wasn't as recent as the morning of September 11, 2001. But it all kind of went back to that. You know, it just seemed like that was the event in which so many of these agendas sprung out of, and I started watching the agendas, and I was going, that seems fake, and that seems like a big lie, and that's, you know, so then you start realizing, well, all these things that are coming out of 9/11 seem like they're a big lie, like they're using this, and then I'm thinking, well, maybe 9/11 itself is just a big gigantic lie, and then that's when you wake up.
And then you go, oh, they want death and destruction and war so much that they'll kill 3,000 of their own people to get war in a different place and kill more people. And then you're like, okay. Now I go into a codependent personality disorder, which is a selflessness that involves almost, that gets unmanageable. Meaning, like, you know, for me, it would always manifest in relationships. Like, no matter what I'm doing, if I had a car and my girlfriend didn't, I would drive to the other side of town just to take her to work for 5 minutes. You know what I mean? So it was like, even though I was in grad school at the time, I was like, no, that's my road girl right there. So then, and then I go, and then I look like a pathetic wimp who this girl can manipulate, walk all over, and then she loses interest, and then it's like, oh, what am I doing? I get crazy invested. The opposite of selflessness is narcissistic personality disorder. And narcissistic personality disorder is, the trademark of it is, no matter how wrong you're proven to be, you double down, you triple down. It's a pathological inability to be wrong about something, despite superior evidence, the narcissist will burst into fits of narcissistic rage when their narrative is questioned and gaslight people with different opinions. So when it might take our awakenings happen at different speeds. I used to be a fancy person. I had a lot of fancy friends before I was radicalized by Charlie Robinson and Ole Demigar, before I became a domestic terrorist from reading books. I had fancy friends who worked on reality shows. I had a career back in LA working on reality shows, and I had two mentors that were completely instrumental in my growth as a reality show worker, a story producer. I was trying to be a story producer for reality shows, and Mimi and John were my friends. Now, and they were my mentors, and I in no uncertain terms forever lost John as a mentor in an email exchange. And before I talk about this email exchange I sent to you, I want to, and if you could read the part of John, do you have these notes on you?
I can pull them up, yes.
If you can, while I just set this up, if you can read John's email to me to tell me to fuck myself. But I just want to talk about John real quick. So when I put out my specials, I put them on a 12 terabyte hard drive. I drove across the country. I logged every show that I did, and I even pulled, like, okay, this joke worked in this venue, this joke. So when I sent a box to my editor opened the box, and my editor, who's a friend of mine, Colin McDowell of Tulsi Productions, put my stand-up specials together. When he saw my notes, he was like, I've never seen notes like this. Like, I've worked on reality shows for a long time. He still works on reality shows. He's working on one right now. As in the capacity of an editor, he goes, none of my story producers have ever given me notes like this. Like, and this was a project that was on a budget, so I wanted to give him really good notes so he could make my stand-up special. And that's 100% John teaching me how to do that. So the level of skills he gave me watching him story produce a show that we worked on together was unbelievable. And after my shift, I would go in and watch him edit the show together we worked on. But he had little quirks in his personality, a little bit of narcissistic personality disorder traits would show up. Like, he was angry at a contestant in our reality show, and he kicked a chair at him. I'm not proud to say that, but that's a fact. He also, like, whoever would show up to the show, their social status, he would treat them completely different. So if there's a pyramid of social hierarchy, when a dominance billionaire hierarchy on the pyramid of people would show up, he would favor that person 100%. I mean, that's just how he is. Maybe he's surviving in Hollywood. But well, we got into an email discussion. First of all, he blocked me as a Facebook friend because I said something. He got vaccinated in a big show of virtue signaling. And then I disagreed with that. And then he blocked me as a Facebook friend. So I emailed him to his email. And I go, so you blocked me as a Facebook friend? We're not Facebook friends anymore. And then we got in an argument about Bill Gates, and then he wrote me this email. And
yes. Okay, you want me to start?
Sure.
Okay, this is what John wrote to you. Bill Gates is also one of the most charitable people who has ever lived, giving away more money than possibly any other human being who's ever existed. His wife started a charitable foundation, which had also gotten Oprah Winfrey and Warren Buffett to donate almost all of their money to charity as well. Buffett alone has given away $37 billion to charity since 2006. Who are you to judge him? How much money have you given to charity in the past year? In fact, what good have you ever done for anyone? And how do your positive actions contribute to the betterment of the world, or compared to the global humanitarian network the Gates has established? We're in the middle of the worst pandemic in 100 years. Millions of people have died from this shit in the world so far. Over 500,000 just here in the United States. That's an actual fact, by the way. The most brilliant minds in the world have worked tirelessly to develop a cure in record time, and fools like you spreading inaccurate anti-vaccine propaganda are just going to prolong this shit and cause more deaths, which is super fucked up.
Yeah, so I'm a bad guy, you know? And then this is what I wrote to him. If I were to say that Bill Gates doesn't have a bachelor's degree, that is that medical disinformation? No, that's a matter of public record. Despite the family fortune, he was too entitled and lazy to do what was required of him by his Harvard professors. If I were to say that Bill Gates was interrogated over antitrust lawsuit in the Justice Department Supreme Court from 1998 to 2001, is that medical disinformation? No, that's a fact and a matter of public record. If I were to say that current estimates have his net worth as $132 billion, and I were to say he's a sociopathically ungenerous, I need only to point to A Christmas Carol to make a courtroom quality evidence case against him. How many Freemasons worked on the show we worked on together, John? How many Freemasons were surrounded by them? And you're still falling for hacky Hegelian dialectic bullshit. Best philanthropist in the world. Give me a fucking break. Foundations allow oligarchs to hide their money from tax collectors. It's worked wonders for the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, and now the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. All PR pushes for tax-free status. This tactic worked wonders for Scientology's longevity. Bill Gates, no bachelor's degree, married Melinda Watson of IBM Dynasty, more specifically Project Paperclip refugees whose computers counted Jew deaths in concentration camps during World War II. So that IBM money needed someone to steal Linux software and copyright it for their endeavor. Windows and Bill Gates and the Watson family found themselves on top again. Windows is very prone to viruses, and customers need to constantly inject CDs and floppy disks into their unstable machines to mend them. Then Bill Gates finds himself on the Lolita Express with Jeffrey Epstein. What a philanthropist! Now, I've been, radicalized, and this is I'm spreading medical disinformation. I lost a mentor, a good friend of mine at the it breaks my heart.
Well, what you said is true. And what your mentor said is exactly how the media wants people to feel, that this guy is giving away all of his money and that he's a philanthropist and that he's doing good work and he's out there with vaccines and he's trying to save the world, and all of that stuff is not true. He is part of an operation. That is true. But it is not to save the world. It's to reduce the population of the world. His father was heavily involved with Planned Parenthood, took over for Margaret Sanger, who started it as a way to deal with the, quote, Negro problem. And this is not necessarily how you want to start your upbringing in a family that is actively pushing to reduce the number of people living on the planet. And so he does this and uses this charity as the same way that his mentors, the Rockefellers, did. It's funny that you're having this conversation with your mentor because Bill Gates used his mentor, the Rockefeller family, as a model for creating the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as a tax shelter, to hide all of their money so that they can't get it taxed and use that as a vehicle to drive the sort of changes that they want. So he's not a philanthropist. If he wanted to save humanity and it was just a matter of food, I mean, a matter of money, he could take his money and just buy food. And he's choosing not to do it. He could give clean drinking water to Africa. He could give food to Africa. He could use some of his money that he's spending on agricultural farmland in the United States and use that money to buy up agricultural farmland in Africa to make it available to the people that need it there most. He's not doing any of that. The only thing he's doing is vaccines. And he says, well, this is going to save more people with vaccines. No, it's not. It's a depopulation agenda. It's a soft kill program. And so he's not a philanthropist. He is. It reminds me of the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, when Charlie, the dummy in the group, is trying to impress this girl, and he doesn't know what to tell her. He's on a blind date with her, and his buddy is at the other table, and he's coming back and forth when the girl, you know, before the girl gets there, he's saying, "Tell her this, you know, tell her this." He says, "Well, what should I tell her that I do for a living?" You know, because he doesn't do anything. He says, "Tell him you're a philanthropist." And he goes, "Oh, okay, I'm a philanthropist. I'm a philanthropist." But he's so dumb, he can't really remember it, doesn't really know how to say it. So then the girl shows up at the date. She starts talking to him, and she says, "So what do you do for a living?" And he says, "I'm a full-on rapist." And that, to me, is Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Gates. They're not philanthropists. They're full-on rapists. They're pretending to be somebody that they're not so that they have cover through the general public. And their money gives them cover, and the money that they use to buy positive media attention gives them cover for what they're really up to. And what they're really up to is some extremely nefarious shit. And your friend has no idea who Bill Gates is. Your friend knows who the media wants you to think Bill Gates is. But he has not done anything other than watch MSNBC. And that's it. There's no, because if you do any sort of look into who Bill Gates is, where his family comes from, what they're involved in, and what his actual goals are, it's completely different from this this press release, which reads, I mean, the email from your friend to you, which reads like a press release given by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I mean, it's just talking points. It's to talk about which money he's got. Talk about the giving pledge. Talk about Warren Buffett. Talk about Oprah Winfrey. Hey, listen, man, I don't know that I would use Oprah Winfrey as a friend to bolster my credibility. She's into some nefarious shit herself. So this guy doesn't know anything other than what he's being told by the media. But then again, he's a hardcore producer in Hollywood, so he's part of that whole circle. So I wouldn't be too surprised.
Yeah, and this guy did tell me, he goes, "Oh, I heard some of my other friends talking, and they were just at Bryan Singer's house, and there was 13-year-old naked boys in the pool." He told me that one night, late night. This was in, well, I don't want to, you know, what year was this? 2010, he told me that. And I'm like, but he said he wasn't there. Well, I know he wasn't there because we were working. He never left the office on the show we were working on when we were working on it. But he's like, "Oh, yeah, my friend just called me last night and said this is what he did at Bryan Singer's house." And it's like, okay, well, did you call a SWAT team, you know what I mean, to shoot everyone there except the little boys being molested? You know. And this, I remember I texted you this lady. I found this lady, Lori Schwab Zabian. Schwab. Lori Schwab? The Oma of the Klaus Schwab family? Boy. So Lori Schwab Zabian was the head of the population management office at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. She gave a speech, and it's on YouTube still, Lori Schwab Zabian, and she's introduced as the population management person at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And this, you know, lizard creature, it's like, how many of them intermarry each other? It's like the Schwabs, the Rockefeller, there's like four families that, you know, maybe their lizard genitalia only connects with their own. They just lay eggs. They lay these big eggs, and they have to be intubated. You know, I don't know what.
Yeah.
But you know, a philanthropist. Bill Gates is a philanthropist with Epstein. I just want to play. This is a mainstream news clip about Bill Gates' relationship with Epstein.
This morning, new questions are swirling around the state of Bill and Melinda Gates' marriage, leading up to last week's divorce announcement. The Wall Street Journal reporting Melinda began talking to divorce attorneys roughly 2 years before the filing. The Journal citing several people reporting that one source of concern for Melinda, a global advocate for women and girls, was Bill's dealings with convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein.
Look, she's a eugenicist, but she has certain places, no-go zones. And she goes, "Wait, you're really hanging out with Epstein? Probably because he's getting all that bad press that's making the family business look bad, that bad press, you know. But, yeah, I mean, that's also on mainstream news, and that's not kind of incorporated into my old mentor's way of thinking. What's sad to me is, like, you know, he would cut reality shows together. We would have these idiots in a house together, and they're kind of boring, and they're given all the food and everything they need to survive in this house. And they would, you know, we would take them on little day trips and stuff like that, and send people to film. And he would turn this super boring footage into a hilarious show. And to not know that that's the same trick that the mainstream news is doing on him, and to accept all the propaganda, it's like, you live behind the veil, John. You live behind the veil. And then the veil comes up, oh, Warren Buffett, oh, these, let's worship these, you know, these billionaires, because they're clearly at the top of society, and that's the people I get my news from, the billionaire, the Jeff Bezos has got, you know, it's just the propaganda. It's like, I could, you know, let's be honest, Charlie Robinson, I've probably given five women orgasms, like, once a piece. Like, that's my history as a lover, okay? What kind of propaganda could I put out there that would make it so Eric Hollerbeck, the greatest lover in the world? Like, if I had a Sundance movie, if I had access to the pharmaceutical industrial complex, how much could I put out? Philanthropist, lover, great adventurer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just a PR problem.
Hanging out with Dan Bilzerian.
I got a PR problem.
And his island.
Anyway.
Yeah, this is the when you're Bill Gates, though, it's not just about donating lots of money to these scientific research institutions. The amount of money that they gave to the media is staggering. And I would also like to remind people that the MS in MSNBC stands for Microsoft. And that, although that partnership has ended like about a year ago, it was in existence for almost two decades. So Bill Gates knows that if you are financing the media, if you are the one giving them free money for doing nothing, and not just a couple, but like hundreds of organizations he was giving money to, it makes it increasingly difficult for those organizations to write bad things about you. It just does. It's just common sense and logic. Eventually, maybe a decision is made that you know, Bill files for divorce, and that is news that's worthy of talking about, or that his relationship with Epstein kind of comes up. But even then, it feels like a bit of an agenda to all of a sudden start to throw Bill Gates under the bus, because they never did for years. And it's not like he wasn't up to this stuff before. His relationship with Epstein goes back 20 years. So, and nobody, you know, they're trying to say, oh, well, you met him in 2013. And no, that's not true. It's not true. He's known him for decades. And so there's... You get cover from the media when you give them free money, but something changed and something happened, and it's as if the media has decided that that Bill has to go. Maybe it's a limited hangout, you know. Maybe they'll say, well, there's a lot of bad press surrounding him, so what we'll do is we'll sort of throw him under the bus, but nothing too bad. Maybe we'll split up his family, and Melinda will actually be running the show because there's less heat on her, so she can kind of keep this going. We'll throw Bill to the wolves, but keep Melinda there to actually run the show and make sure that if anything happens to any of Bill's money, well, now it's divided up. Now Melinda's got half of it, and you can't get it from her, so maybe you focus on Bill. So I don't know. I feel like none of this is accidental. That there has to be some sort of a decision has been made, because he was protected for a very long time by the media, and now that has changed. So I'm glad. I like to see it. I like to see these guys start to get exposed for what they're up to. But I've got a sneaking suspicion this is not as organic as we're led to believe.
Yeah, and I saw also, look at the mainstream news, what they do when Prince Philip dies. They go, oh, poor Prince Andrew. Oh, his pedo dad has died. Or, you know, oh, they try to raise this sympathy of, No, no, wait a minute. Wasn't Andrew just at Epstein's Island? Oh, but his father died. Blah, blah. Like,
he was at Peter Nygaard's island as well. And
philanthropy.
For philanthropy, right. And he was ready, you know, two guys, Epstein and Nygaard, who both had 727 airplanes, 50-year-old airplanes that have staircases in the rear that can deploy at up to 10,000 feet of altitude, which is an interesting thing that you could use them to, you know, throw things out of, like people. Or drugs, or whatever, or weapons, or whatever you want to throw out of there. Just saying, it's interesting that the two pedo guys have these old airplanes. You want to know who else has an old airplane, an old 727? Donald Trump. So, what's happening here? You know?
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to make a real estate deal. You make a real estate deal, and then the check that you wrote to the guy, you rip up as you walk him off the plank after it, after the ink. Oh, yeah, he definitely sold me this building for zero. I can't find the money, though. And then, yeah, I can't find him either. It's like he just took off right after the meeting. I don't know. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
But I also want to say this. So just getting to narcissistic personality disorder and my friend John, you know, he kicked the chair at a contestant. And this contestant, like, his mom was dying and had all these complicated health problems over and over. And the reality show I worked on, they exploited this by filming him crying. And this is a billion-dollar company, filming this kid crying over his mom and all of the health conditions. Did we pay for them? Any of her medical care? No. So then we just aired, oh, it's so sad his mom has these medical conditions. I wish we could do something other than filming your tears for the oligarchy to, you know, enjoy.
I'm just surprised that your production company wasn't responsible for causing the medical conditions.
Yeah.
That seems like something Hollywood would do.
Just for a plot point. Oh, my God, I got a phone call from my mom. She's sick all of a sudden. What happened while we were filming over here in L.A.? The other thing, I speaking of something that's disgusting like this, I used to be a big fan of the X Games, and in 2002 in high school, you know, me and my buddies, we went to the X Games in Philadelphia. We watched Matt Hoffman do a 900 on a vert ramp, no-handed 900, unbelievable. Like, I'm such a fan of the X Games, but a series of events happened that I will never watch it again. And what happened was, I saw a broadcast, this was in the 2010s or 2011, I'm watching the X Games, I'm a big fan. I mean, it's unbelievable, people backflipping on motorcycles, it's crazy. And then they're like, kind of like ballerinas, they're graded on their grace and how well they land, it's beautiful. And it's dangerous. And ESPN, I noticed, was sponsored by Aetna, so they had Aetna signs everywhere, you know, for health insurance. And then what happened is, Caleb Moore, he backflips a snowmobile and it lands on him and kills him. And then the next broadcast, like that happened, and then a few days later they go, we're asking for donations for Caleb Moore's funeral. Like they're charging him for like the destruction of the snowmobile that he crashed. You know what I mean? It's like, well, he has all these medical bills now because we tried to save him. It's like, well, isn't Aetna a sponsor? Yeah, but they get dummies to watch the show and buy health insurance. Well, couldn't Aetna have fixed Caleb Moore's like medical problems so he doesn't have to beg on the internet for funeral arrangements? Oh, no. They don't write those checks. That's hard. So then Sarah Berg, Kevin Pierce, they have brain injury snowboarding. There's something called the Athlete Recovery Fund. And the Athlete Recovery Fund is this big pile of money that they're asking for donations to help all of these X-Game athletes who suffer. I mean, Stephen Murray broke his neck trying to double backflip the same year that Dave Mira was doing it. Dave Mira killed himself maybe from concussion syndrome, maybe. Maybe depression, CTE. But Aetna, they're just a sponsor. They can't possibly pay for it. So you're going to ask people to flip motorcycles backwards, and then you're going to go, oh, if you crash a motorcycle, let's charge your account with ESPN, and then we're going to charge, you know, we're a little strapped for your medical bills.
Well, ESPN is owned by ABC and owned by Disney, so is it really that much of a surprise that ESPN is on the wrong side of humanity? No. And I am, besides being a sports fan, I'm a co-owner of a company that does media training for pro athletes. So we get guys ready for the interviews and for the draft and for commercials and get guys, ex-athletes, ready for broadcasting and all that stuff. So I've been working in this field for 2 decades now. And, I grew up on ESPN, but I know who they are, you know. I know who they are, and I know who they aren't. They aren't maybe the people that are working there are addicted to the sports, but the people at the top, it's just a numbers game. You know, that's the reason why you get rid of Kenny Mayne. You know, he cost you too much money. Hey, the fans like him. Who cares? Get rid of him. He's done at ESPN. They got rid of a lot of people. It's because money. And nobody's watching. And people are kind of getting tired of this, you know. And now you're starting to see what can best be described as completely idiotic. The blending of sports with social justice. And that is repulsive to almost everybody, except the people that are participating in it and the top brass at ESPN / ABC / Disney. They don't even know. They're so caught up in smelling their own farts that they don't even realize that the vast majority of the world has zero interest in seeing Black Lives Matter across the sidelines of in the bubble in Orlando for the NBA season last year.
Right.
And their ratings reflected that. And you're starting to see now in the news, we've got the hammer throw qualifier chick who says that, you know, she doesn't want to stand for the national anthem. You've got some BMX person who's like, I want to burn it all down, and you know, and all this stuff. Look, good luck with the ratings. People are not going to be tuning in to watch that sort of garbage. And I'm, to be crystal clear, I don't get all misty-eyed when I see the American flag myself, and the Star-Spangled Banner and the national anthem and all that horseshit. I view as propaganda. But I also know that I am in a very small segment of the population, and if you want to appeal to a large segment, you're going to have problems if you've got these athletes up there that are using this as their as their social justice moment to give the fist or whatever. I mean, you can do that, but you can't deny the reality that comes after you do that, which is you're going to have a huge segment of the population hate your guts just for what you've done, and they're going to take it out on the broadcasters too by not watching. So we're in a really interesting intersection of social justice and sports, and now it moving up onto the international stage with the Olympics.
Yeah, it's weird. You're like, how can these companies take these losses where they put out a movie that costs, you know, $100 million, and then it makes $2 million at the box office? I was always like, how is this possible where they can take these losses and then put out another movie the next day? And then you realize, oh, the propaganda arm of the Federal Reserve that can print all the money it wants finds it more important to get the narrative they want out in a glossy movie. And they don't even care if it only makes $2 million back, because they could just print more money, number one. Number two, they're so nuts about relieving their karma for their future false flag or, you know, transhumanist agenda that, you know, it's like they'll take the loss.
Yeah.
But they won't take the loss when it comes to health care for athletes for some reason. That's where they... I guess it's like, you know, when you know, how much it's hard with ticket sales when someone breaks their spine and like forever they have to wear diapers, and you know, it's very, I'm sure it's cost intense for people to, you know, clean the poop diapers off these people. But I mean, that's the game you're playing. If you're asking people to double backflip bicycles for the X Games, that's part of it. And if you don't cover that, you have to shut it down. I don't know. So it's just very weird where the system will lose money on one thing and then not spend a nickel on another. It really shows you who the beast is.
Yeah, it's agenda driven. Like you said, there's no money in helping Dave Mira with his mental struggles, or to compensate somebody that's had a snowmobile fall on their head. You know, that doesn't really give you the impact you're looking for. But if you can make a shitty movie that demonizes American gun owners, they've got endless budget for that. I mean, whatever, you name it, that you can get yourself some financing for it.
Yeah. Okay, so last time we talked a little bit about this guy called Ted Gunderson, and I want to play a clip here to set this up. I played this last time. This is Ted Gunderson's speech on the McPherson school case.
Let's talk about the McMartin case.
McMartin.
In April 1985, authorities went to the McMartin case and looked for tunnels under the school. The children had said that they were taken into tunnels under the school. There was a chamber down there. They were sexually molested. That involved ceremonies, adults with robes, candles, chanting. Adults had no clothes on under their robes. And they were taken up into a tunnel and a triplex, a bathroom trapdoor of the triplex next door. They were taken out in automobiles. We're talking about 2-3-4-year-old children, folks. And prostituted in the community.
So after we talked, you said that Ted Gunderson is kind of shady himself.
I'd heard that. I've heard that he was not. And so I'm having a tough time reconciling that, because on the one hand, you know, he was the leading person, the leading voice in that McMartin preschool situation, and yet then I heard conflicting reports that he was knee-deep in it. So is he a limited hangout? I don't know. I need more investigation on that. I do appreciate anybody that is bringing forward information about this, and I do remember, I mean, I lived in Manhattan Beach for many years, for almost a decade, and I do remember that I remember that story. I was much younger, and I wasn't living there at the time, but I remember that story. It was a big deal. So anybody that's going to shine light on that, I'm most definitely in favor of. And I'm going to have to get into a deep dive on old Ted. See if what I'm hearing, if what I heard about him being maybe not so squeaky clean is disinformation coming from the feds too. Could be. So have to get more to the bottom of that.
It's kind of like how Hillary Clinton pulls every string at the DNC to fudge elections, and then Donald Trump beats her, and she's like, we got to find out the foreign interference here. It's like,
right.
So you're, it's, you know, that's what it reeks to me of.
Could be, yeah, and it very well could be. Could be that Ted Gunderson was the cleanest guy in the whole operation. And frankly, I hope that's the case, because I'm tired of the people being, you know, doing one thing and then find out that they're something else. So it would be preferential for me to find out that Ted Gunderson was a good guy all along. So hopefully that is the case.
But if there's evidence, I'd like to hear it too. But because, you know, I've watched a lot of his lectures, and I think he was onto something. But, you know, it's like, I don't know. Because the way he spent his own money and dealt with the families and kind of compiled all the accusations, you know, I don't know. I can't say he's necessarily a bad actor from where I'm sitting, but I don't know. So that's what, but I trust you. So when you were saying maybe he's a little shady, I was like pretty curious about that.
We'll leave it at this. It's probably a good idea in every case to know as much as we can about about all sides of it. So if there's more to know about Ted, and somebody knows more about Ted, I'm interested in hearing it. But yeah, it's the idea that, you know, the idea that high-level people, well-respected people in the community, they don't necessarily have to be high-level, but just well-respected heads of schools and things like that, heads of religious organizations, that they're involved in child trafficking is reprehensible. It's disgusting, and we come to understand that either through, especially in the 80s, there was a lot of this happening, Franklin scandal and the Craig Spence call boy ring that was happening, and Finders cults, and all, there's a lot of really nefarious things happening, and it gave us this sort of look behind the curtain, and what it shows you is that, hey, listen, you know, a lot of times these powerful people at some of the highest levels of society are into some pretty devious activities that involve children. And part of the reason is because that's what they're into. And part of the reason is also because they get them in those situations so that they can compromise them and control them. So there's a little of both. First of all, I mean, I can't get myself in a situation like that because I don't have the appetite for the little kids the way some of these guys do. So it's not just being in a position of power that makes you a pedophile. It's that if they want to control somebody, you elevate those pedophiles up into positions of power and control. And so it's like people start scratching their head going, I can't believe that, you know, Dennis Hastert, who was like the third in line, you know, to become the president, was a notorious child predator, and I can't believe that all these people that we've seen were involved in this. And it's like, well, you should believe that. You should understand that. It shouldn't be that big of a surprise, because if you've got people in high-ranking positions, especially inside government, you have to make sure you can control them. It used to be that you could control them back in the 50s because you knew that they were secretly gay or they were cheating on their wives, but that has an expiration date on it. You know, like, times change, you can cheat on your wife, and some people are going to say something about it, and some people are going to keep it quiet because they're doing the same thing. You can be closeted, and people go, oh, I'm going to ruin your career, but to some other people, they're like, it doesn't really matter anymore. But if you're a pedophile and they've got the goods on you, there's no expiration date on that. They can keep you forever, and they do. And it's the ultimate control tactic. And so when you write books about control, like I have, you wind up finding out about brownstone operations that involve powerful people like Jeffrey Epstein. You read about the Franklin scandal and how that worked, and how all the prominent people in the Reagan administration were, not all of them, but a lot of them were involved in this sort of stuff, and you go, Jesus, it's everywhere. And it's like, yeah, you're right, it is, it's everywhere. Not accidentally, it's everywhere by design, because they have found that the most, the hook that gets into these politicians that you can't just pull out is the pedophilia one. And you get it in there, and then you've got those people for a long, long time. So it's also part of the reason why there's no finish line for these people. They get done in politics, or they get done and like their music career is seemingly over, but they're still working, they're still on tour. It's like they have no choice but to keep going on the treadmill. Henry Kissinger should have retired 2 decades ago, right? He's in his late 90s. Guy's still at work. Soros, still at work. All these guys, they're motivated by something beyond just having a career. There is either there's something that compels them to keep working, or there's something that is actively forcing them to stay in these positions of power. And I believe that it is the pedophilia.
And blackmail is just an engineering problem. You know, it's just, how do you gain a function the best blackmail? And, you know, It's just whatever the society holds taboo. If we lived in a sick society, you know, in the year 3059, where pedophilia wasn't a crime anymore, then, you know, they would find out whatever the crime is. Oh, I was secretly a Catholic. You know what I mean? Like, secret. You know what I mean? It depends on what the society holds to be a taboo at the time. And, but yeah, ugh. I mean, if you have, you know, nieces or nephews or kids, it's just the level of anger that you would have for someone to violate is just unbelievable. Anyway, so I've got my Germany shirt on. I was a German Auschwitz-Student in high school, and then in college at the University of New Orleans, I met a bunch of German exchange students. I don't know. So from the comings and goings, I was in Oktoberfest in 2018 with my father. You know, you're out partying, you're meeting Germans. All of a sudden, you get phone numbers, you know. And one phone number I can't get rid of, I met a guy called Klaus Schwab Jr., the trust fund son of Klaus Schwab. And he won't stop calling me and leaving voicemails. So I have some of those. I don't know if you're interested. I mean,
I'd love to hear it.
Okay, yeah. So it's like he's always jet-setting. He's always in different places, you know. So this is just the first voicemail here.
Alice, it's Klaus Schwab Jr. Yes, I just remembered something. You were asking about the McMartin Police School. I went there sometimes when I was in America for study times. And my father, Klaus Schwab, would do some rituals in the Manhattan Beach, or he would go to Costa Mesa or something with the OTOs. And I would still do my studies in the McMartin Police School sometimes for English times. And then, there were tunnels under the ground, but the other children were trafficked for sex or something to Washington, D.C. I would just go, it wasn't trafficked, I would go to Argentina sometimes and see Uncle Fierro. You know, Hitler died in 1994, but when I was young, we would go over there and in Argentina with nice weather and say hi to the Fuhrer. And it was so funny. He would always make poops on my, he would make scheiße on my chest, and my whole family would laugh. It was really funny.
That just sounds like a horrible, horrible incident.
That they're into, the elite are into much different activities than we are. That is, though disturbing to you, of course, that is completely normal and par for the course with these people.
Yeah, they're trying to turn their kids into psychopaths. I don't know why he keeps calling in. It's like this weird, like, European answering machine that comes on. This is another voicemail from Klaus Schwab Jr.
Ehrlich, it's Klaus Schwab Jr. I'm in Switzerland. I just got out of a banking conference and I'm on my way to the blood and the sex orgies. And I realize I have particular taste. For example, I only now like adrenochrome when it's flesh pressed. They put the baby's head on the juicer and then the adrenochrome drains and you get the tears and the fears. And that is, I feel crazy.
Yeah, he's always, like, hopped up, or he's always, like, you know what I mean, in and out of a conference.
It's the adrenochrome mostly talking?
Yeah. Yeah, he's always kind of, he's always fired up when he calls me, I don't know.
Ready to be blood.
Here's another voicemail.
Ehrlich, Klaus Schwab Jr., I have your phone, and I will call you with different matters. It's late nights. The boys, they got out the castle before we could have the ritual. And then I found them very easily with my human hunting parties. And they all had the chips in them from the vaccination, so they were easy to find. It was so funny.
Oh, they got the RFID chips in the...
It just doesn't seem very sporting to me.
Yeah, that's because, a good point.
Like, you know, they let the fox go, and then they've got the dogs and everything. And I just felt like that was a bit, you know, it was sort of like cheating. Like, they should have to go find the fox themselves. And now with the hunting parties and you've got the RFID chips in these kids. I mean,
yeah.
It kind of takes the fun out of it, I would say, I would think.
For yeah.
them, but, you know, whatever, to each his own.
And, you know, it's fenced in sometimes on these canned hunting trips, you know? And so, like, if all the birds are fenced in, they can't even fly away. And so it's like, that's one level of cheating. But then, yeah, when you actually have the GPS of it, you know, I don't know. But he's sad sometimes. Sometimes he calls me and he's really sad, Klaus Schwab Jr. is. So let me play this one.
Alish, it is Klaus Schwab Jr. I'm at Davos. I just had a meeting. And I found out yesterday with the bankers that love is not real. Love is not real. Everything is a commodity.
Oh. Is that what they taught him at Davos? That love wasn't real, huh?
That's, I think that's, that. Isn't that the theme of the 2022 World Economic Forum? Love is not real.
And it's like $200,000 for a ticket in, you know? And so look at the audience they're talking to, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they have...
Listen.
Yeah.
They are working off of different source material than the rest of us. I feel like they know they have access to some think tanks, and if the think tanks have come to the realization that love is not real, you know, it's only, you know, we know how these things go. It's only like 3 or 4 or 5 years until in the future that then we see that agenda unfold. So we should expect that in the future. Love is not real, you know, by Victoria's Secret.
Oh, I can't wait. That sounds hot. I can't wait. Speaking of hetero flexibility, he called me about, because I met Sam Tripoli here in Austin, and then he called me about, and he said some really racist things that Klaus Schwab Jr. did, so I wanted to play this here.
Elish, it's Klaus Schwab Jr. I made a terrible mistake. I made a selfie time with that Sam Tripolish, Hell Tripolish. And then later I found out he's Armenian. And that drove me crazy. I hugged the guy for a photograph one time. Makes me crazy. He's from Armenia. You know, we had one Armenian genocide in 1914. And when I have the chance to do another one, I will finish the job. It's Klaus Schwab Jr. Ellie, you don't return my calls. I don't know what this...
Yeah, so...
Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, don't let that guy anywhere near Glendale, California.
Oh, yeah, he'll
Armad's Golden Palace shooting up the place before long.
Yeah, he'll probably have like a gold chromed out, you know, Mercedes SUV and just like mow down, you know, whole streets. He said about, you know, the fourth industrial revolution is coming and you will own nothing and you will be happy. And I think Klaus Schwab Jr. kind of spilled the beans on this next phone call of exactly what the agenda is with that.
Elish, Klaus Schwab Jr., I just got out of a banking meeting with their cornhead Homo sapiens and their Draco reptilians and their from the Pleiades. And I am lowering the, with the COVID-19 crisis, I'm lowering the price of ELS Incorporated. And so when you low, you buy low, you sell high. So now the lizards, when I chip the humans so that they can find their beast of burdens, then when everyone is chipped by low, and then the Dracos take over the lizards. So, The boy's alive. We're going to crack skulls and have some adrenochrome.
Oh, you know, it's always the same thing with this guy, you know? But he says that's weird. He's buying Earth low to sell it high to the lizards. Is that what he said? They're trying to...
Yeah, something about that, yeah. Yeah, he needs a hobby.
You know...
I mean, clearly, stalking you is only part of... what he's capable of.
I guess
the lizards is something unforgivable.
I think it, as a narcissist, he kind of latched onto my codependence, and I kind of was listening to him, and he was kind of like rubbing my, and then like we were friendly, you know, and so now it's like every time he's like in and out of a banking meeting. But I also get the sense that like his loop is pretty, his echo chamber is pretty tight. So it's like the same thing. It's the blood and the sex parties. It's the banking conventions. It's the plans for global takeover. And so it's like he's kind of out of touch. But anyway, this is the last. This is one the last voicemail I have recorded. I'm sure there's more on my phone now, but.
Deze voicemail box accepteert geen berichten. Dank u voor uw oproep. Tot ziens.
Alice, it's Klaus Schwab Jr. I'm having a pickle, or I am in the pickle. How you say is this? This American phrase. I'm having a pickle. I'm in a pickle. I have a problem, Elish. I have a problem. So I has the mail bills, and there's blood in my Mercedes. Now, how do I get that up? Is that with the baking soda, or do I put the vinegar down, or do I need a washcloth, apple cider vinegars? How do I get the blood from the Mercedes?
Yeah, so his he's not, I don't feel bad for him. When he calls me with a problem, it's like I don't really feel bad for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, I think any good therapist would say he's creating his own problems.
Oh, yeah.
And that is, I mean, it's really not your position or obligation to fix the problems that he's creating for himself. He's bored. He's bored. Like a lot of these rich industrialists, they've got everything. They bought everything with a price tag on it. So now they start looking for things like selling the world to the reptilians or drinking babies' blood or murdering people in their Mercedes. And this is, of course, the sort of behavior that you would exhibit if you were having paranoid schizophrenia, and which I think is maybe par for the course. Or if you have narcissistic codependency situations. Have you ever considered maybe giving your therapist's contact information to him to help?
Yeah, I just think he needs to put his energy into a positive direction. You know, it seems like he doesn't have the best coping mechanisms when things don't go his way, and, you know, he needs to get out there and exercise and maybe do some charity, but it's like I don't really want him around people that he can endanger. So for me, you know, to give him advice, that's why I don't even take his calls anymore. And he also introduces himself the same way, like I don't know who it is when he calls. It's like you know, number one, I have his number saved. Number two, it's a 440, like it has to go to the American code before it gets in. So it's like, it's like I don't know who it is, you know.
Well, George W. Bush has had a lot of really good results with painting, so it might be that calms him down and gets him into more of a state of mind that's you know, beneficial for him to do a little introspection.
It's weird that these guys also they set the agenda for us, and that they're so out of touch that it never quite works out the way they want, like the COVID-19 agenda or 9/11, whatever false flag they perpetrate onto us, and then have the solution of the Patriot Act ready. They're always surprised when the peasants start to rebel against them.
That is because, like most of us, they also grew up on Scooby-Doo. And when you get to the end of Scooby-Doo, the wheels fall off. At some point, you know, they can't keep it going. There's too few suspects, and eventually you just pull the mask off, and it's like that, it's the specter. And we knew it was him. You know, I knew all along it was him. And so I think that you know, they if maybe if they'd grown up in, these guys, if they'd grown up in a different era, maybe they would, I don't know, maybe the outcome would be a bit different. But you're right, there's always, you know, it always falls apart, and then as they're getting dragged away, they're screaming about if it wasn't for these pesky kids, they would have, you know, had control of the world, or they would have killed all the Jews or whatever. But it's just, I think what it exposes is that it's very difficult to run these interplanetary enslavement colonies, and I'm sure it looks easy on an Independence Day, but when you're doing it in reality, there's just a lot of nuance to it. Yeah. I think that's kind of where the wheels fall off for these people.
All right. So last couple things. Oh, first of all, I want to say, like, it, you know, I'm in Austin, Texas. I'm doing comedy all the time. You know what I mean? I was trying to get, when Sam Tripoli was in town, I was trying to get on his show. You know what I mean? And I couldn't. Like, Eric Hollerbach could not get on Sam Tripoli's show. But Klaus Schwab Jr., he walks right in, you know, from a sex and blood orgy, and he walks right on to Tripoli's show. It's like, there's a lot of nepotism in the comedy scene, you know, even at the local level. So I think that's just worth pointing out. Nepotism. Anyway. So
none of us are immune from it. We all have to deal with it, you know.
No, but he's a big name.
It's happening to you in the comedy scene. It's happening to you in the, reset world.
Are there any beefs that you have with other people in the awake and aware movement? Any other researchers that have tried to bump you off or big time you?
No, I'm in a pretty good spot. Susan Wojcicki hates my guts. We've established that over at YouTube. But yeah, okay. That's a two-way street, because I feel the same way about her. But as far as my relationship in the alternative media, things have been pretty good. I don't... you know, that could all change, really, at any moment. I think we're all aware of that.
So, did they give you a personal email? That's your YouTube handler, is that Susan person? Did she give you an email as to what... It was medical disinformation for vaccine content?
No, it was... I was... My video with Matt Landman, who is the director of Franken Skies. We did an hour-long conversation on macroaggressions, talking about the weather. And the weather, apparently, is extremely filled with violence. The video was taken down for violent content, and we were quite literally talking about the weather.
Yeah. Well,
and
you
I
go.
Think that's reasonable. That it makes sense.
Yeah, I heard that podcast. You're bucking the narrative, you know. Even when the CIA guy John Brennan explains about chemtrails, what that was hate speech that you exposed that this official has said, and then you say what he says, and then that's hate speech in context.
That you can find on their platform already.
Yeah.
In video format.
But when you say 1 + 1 equals this, then it's hate speech because
it's racist.
Do you see the wheels of the machine falling apart, the traveling carnival of government? Do you see that they're getting desperate and they're trying to do this fourth industrial revolution with Klaus Schwab and his brat son? Do you see that this is going to be successful, or is it falling apart? If I could get a prediction from the Octopus of Global Control writer, Charlie Robson, what's about to happen?
We will know that their plan for humanity is working perfectly and according to plan when they no longer have to offer you free beer, free donuts, 2 laps around Talladega, lottery tickets, weed, which I'm not opposed to, hamburgers from Shake Shack, and all of these various items in order to entice you to take the medical magic potion that will give you immunity from the deadly virus that's killing everybody on the planet. So once they get to a point where they don't have to incentivize you, I will think that is a sign that things are going according to plan. But when you need to bring in the junior varsity team, like Mayor Lori Lightfoot and Bill de Blasio and that American psycho Gavin Newsom and all of these politicians, to incentivize people with what can best be described as the most insulting list of demands I've ever seen. I mean, I'm frankly a bit surprised that a lifetime supply of Slim Jims wasn't brought into the equation as a realistic reward for getting, for taking the experiment. It's just, it's quite embarrassing. And we, and you know, and you and I goof on this stuff because, and mock it because it deserves to be mocked, because it really is so preposterous that you kind of have to do that. But if we're being, if we're being actually serious about this, I felt like there must have been a meeting, maybe it was a Zoom call, I don't know, where they got all the governors and all these high-profile mayors and everyone on it, and somebody just screamed at them, I don't care what it takes, I don't care if you've got to give them away give away lottery tickets and beer to get these dummies to take the shot. Do whatever you need to do to make it happen. Because almost at the same time, we started to see these ideas. Like I felt like the, like some guy was on the call screaming, going, you know, I don't care if it's, you know, it like made up the dumbest, you know, scenario ever. I don't give a shit if you have to give away free beer and scratch off lotto tickets. Get these people to do it. Just do it. And like all the mayors were like taking notes. Like they're like, scratch off ticket, free beer. How many laps around Talladega in your preposterous example? Two laps around Talladega. Because they took the most cartoonish things and then offered them back to people. Let's be clear. How fucking insulting is that? Like they think that yeah. You're so dumb that the key to getting you to do something that you don't want to do is lottery tickets. Like, that's quite insulting. And yet, here we are, and it's not just one state. It's happening in multiple states. I live in Colorado. It's happening here. I know it's happening in California. I've heard it talked about in Pennsylvania. Surprisingly, in West Virginia, they were giving away college, tuition, which, frankly, if ever there was a place where the Slim Jim should have been free, it was West Virginia, but no offense, but let's just talk about know your audience. And this is just weird to me. And I think that for some of the people that are, you know, maybe on the fence or sort of the casual observer of this whole thing, when you start to see this, when you start to see the ridiculous lengths that they're going to, I think even those people are going, okay, this all seems like a gigantic scam. The government that that stays up extra late to try and figure out new ways to creatively take your tax money and creates new laws in order to put you in cages on disproportionately long prison stretches is now all of a sudden super concerned, almost obsessed with taking care of your health. Like, let's just be objective and look at that. That's just not how the government works. So anyway, I think that the wheels are coming off of this narrative because, and you can tell that by the fact that they are going to extraordinary lengths to keep this live, alive.
Yeah, and I think it was in 2010 or so, I was working on that reality show with John, and I came home to my apartment, and I live right next to a Walgreens. And I noticed something with the marketing of the flu jab that year is that at first they said a $10 gift certificate if you take this seasonal flu vaccine. And then I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then Thanksgiving was coming up. And then they go, you'll get a free turkey. Like, they kept changing the sign every time I came home, right? So they changed the sign. One night I'd come home, and it's like a poor neighborhood, you know? And it was like free turkey for Thanksgiving, right? And then the sign 3 days later was two free turkeys for Thanksgiving. And I go, they're getting desperate. What is in that shit that they're going to inject me with? You know, two free turkeys? It's like, we'll give you a glazed donut and a turkey. It's like, what is going on here? It's just like I saw the desperation of like, oh, they're really trying to stab everybody with this. And they're... Like, Walgreens trades on Wall Street. They're not a benevolent organization. They're not just like, oh, well, we want everyone to not get each other sick, so here's some turkey. Like, they don't give people stuff. Like, that's not in their business model. Their business model is to get more stocks and
they're in the buy low, sell high. They're selling you medicine to treat the flu. So why would they want to have you come in and get a flu shot that's going to, let's just say, protect you from getting the flu when they're in the business of selling you the things that you need to deal with the flu? It doesn't make sense. Unless, of course, the flu shots don't work, and unless the flu shots actually give you the flu, which they do, and unless it costs, they're getting it subsidized by the government, which they probably are, and then they're saying, well, whatever, it's going to cost us $10. Let's just say it costs them $10 for the shot, for them to get it. They take a $10, they pay $10 for the shot. They give it to you for free because they know you're going to spend $70 on Sudafed and Theraflu and all these things and Kleenex and all the things that you need to hunker down and battle this flu that you've got for the next 4 days or so that was brought on by the product that they incentivize you to get. You don't have to be an evil genius supervillain to understand this. I mean, it might help for some people. All you have to do is just understand accounting and maybe stock prices and realize that they will give you the razors and sell you the razor blades, you know? So that's the business model they're operating on. They're not in the business of curing your sickness and making you healthy. They're in the business of treating the symptoms. And all they sell are things that treat the symptoms. They don't actually make it go away. Or make it go away would be like building the indestructible car. You'd sell one of them, and then you'd never be able to sell another car again. So they want you broken. It's part of their business model, not just Walgreens. It's part of the whole medical industry. And I'd like to remind people that the medical industry is out there saving lives. Medical industry is the third leading cause of death in the United States, behind heart disease and cancer. So let's not pretend that the medical industry is out there saving, you know, everybody that's coming to them for help. They're most definitely not. In fact, they're killing quite a few of them in the process. So and by the way, you can't sue the vaccine manufacturers for any sort of liability since 1986 when they made that a law. So there's a lot to look into here, and I think your assessment of what Walgreens was doing with the turkey incentivization is true. It's desperate. That's what you do when you're making desperate moves.
Yeah, you know what I kind of realized about you, like when we talk, in the back of my head I'm going, okay, he had a marketing degree. But there's actually a degree in marketing degree, and the degree within marketing is mind control, and within mind control is magic, and having your will, imposing your will onto others, and having them bend to your will.
Yeah, we never got into any of that stuff in marketing, which is the reason why I went through 4 years of school and got out and still didn't realize that my marketing degree has the ability to be weaponized. To me, I still thought I was selling razors to people that didn't want razors. You know what I mean? Like I felt like that's kind of where it ended. And like, I'm trying to convince people to buy some shit that they don't really need. And I could kind of live with that because we all buy a bunch of stuff we don't need, and then we look at it and go, that was dumb, why did I do that? Necessarily think of that as harmless, but I also didn't take it far enough down that path, because like you said, there is like the soft sell, you know, where it's like, oh, you should buy our car instead of someone else's car, because our car is cool, it makes you feel better on the inside when you drive it around, you feel like a cooler than somebody else. That I don't necessarily have a problem with that. That's just manipulation. Not good, but not inherently evil. But once you start taking things like subliminal messages and embedding that in there, you start doing things like Disney has done with the sexualization of children that's sort of hidden in these frames, and then you start to get into a really kind of nefarious level of marketing, where it's not even marketing anymore. It's like you know,
criminal endangerment. Criminal endangerment of a child.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
With mass mind control.
And I want nothing to do with that, and I understand we're all in sales, you know, as a guy, the first time you go out to a bar, try to meet girls, you realize we're all in sales. So I don't have a problem necessarily with the idea of trying to sell somebody something. But when you do that, first of all, there have to be some rules to the game, which I guess there sort of are, but for the casual people. But my problem is when you're trying to sell somebody something and you're lying to them. You're telling them things that aren't true. You're telling them that they need to be scared about things that they don't need to be scared of, and that they're going to die unless they take like a magical shot or something like that. That to me is a whole other level of insanity, and we're living in that, and especially in America, where we're stuck in this we're in this hyper fueled media driven culture where most people won't do anything unless their television tells them to do it, and then they'll do it without even thinking about it.
Yeah, no.
Television told them to. And that level of hypnosis, with like understanding how the mind works and understanding how like resting brain waves works, like that, when you put the science in the marketing and media, you get propaganda, and that, of course, I have a huge problem with. And I'd like to remind people out there that, you know, that were like, oh, the only scandal Obama had was that one time he wore a tan suit to a press conference. I'd like to remind people that he had a guy named Richard Stengel working for him in the White House who had been the editor-in-chief of Time magazine, whose joke title inside the Obama White House was Chief Propagandist, and that he, along with Obama and that administration, took the extraordinary step of legalizing propaganda through the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, which legalized propaganda inside the United States to be used on Americans. So, keeping that in mind, what we've realized is that they've legalized lying to us in the media. It's coming from about as high up as you can get. The Obama White House was in charge of that. They've got guys in charge of it that are about as high ranking as you can get. Literally, the editor-in-chief of Time magazine coming out and saying on video at the CFR, I don't have a problem with propaganda. Every country uses it. I don't think that's necessarily all that bad. You've got to use it to control people. We are in a situation where we are getting manipulated and controlled, and we realize that. You and I realize that. Your audience realizes that. But the vast majority of people out there, especially a lot of the COVID people that are just sort of like mindlessly doing what the government media tells them to, they have no idea that any of this stuff is happening, that it's been legalized, that it's been normalized, it's been brought into the White House. It is a point of policy. It is a policy directive to lie to the American people about things. So, you know, going back to your friend John, who writes the letter about, you know, who are you to judge these people and everything, it's like, dude, you are falling for the lie. John, you are falling for the lie. It is being sold to you by people that are very good at lying and know exactly how to tell you this story in a way that will make you connect with it. So that's where we are. The power of the media, the power of propaganda, and then if you do it right, you're able to then suppress even the idea that this is a possibility that you could be manipulated in the media. Boy, if you can do all those things, then you can make the public do whatever you want them to do. And after the last year and a half or so that we've lived through, I think that should be apparent to just about everybody.
And that, I really believe that's John's fatal flaw, is he's a status mathematician. When you have more status, he's more your friend. When you have more status, it's correct information. Now, science doesn't care about Fauci's status, a you know, a germ either functions or doesn't, and maybe he gains a functions research. But what I'm saying is science is not doesn't care what degree you have. It's about observation and data and proper... so when you are like, when Fauci says, I am science, if you disagree with me, that goes against everything to do with science. It's not a person's ego, John. It's about, it's not status of the information. It's, is it true or is it not true? Anyway, someone who's got big status over here at the Highway Diaries, Charlie Robinson, he's got the Macroaggressions podcast. He's on the Union of the Unwanted. He's got the Octopus of GlobalControl.com. He's a good guy. He's Charlie Robinson. My website is EricHollerbach.com. I got stand updates there. If you click on the calendar, you go to ACBDRemedy.com, get yourself cannabis oil, and use promo code Eric, that's E-R-I-C, for 20% off cannabis oil from ACBD Remedy. It's a family company. Thanks to my guest, Charlie Robinson, this Highway Diary, episode 306. All right, I'm stopping recording now. All right, cool. You want to hang out for a bit?